Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Christine Williams.
And you are listening to the midweek version of Fiber Talk, that twice weekly podcast that we do for people who play with needles. Yes. Okay. The Twisted Stitcher, Vonna Pfeiffer, comes through again. I just got, a couple days ago, the second stocking for our grandson, Connor.
Which she posted on Instagram, and it looks fantastic.
Oh, I didn't see.
So everybody should check out.
Oh, I didn't see. No.
You didn't see?
No.
Oh.
I didn't see that she'd posted it.
Yeah. So I'm going to have to see if I can cut and paste it and repost it on our Instagram, because it is phenomenal. It looks great.
She's amazing. She does a great job, I'll tell you. Buttoned right down. Yep.
Yep.
So, yeah, so I was pleased. So that's off to our daughter. So now that now she can have stockings for Christmas for both grandsons hanging up there on the old whatever they hang it on. And, yeah, pretty exciting.
And you didn't expect to get those done this Christmas at all.
No. I mean, I expected to get Connor's done, hoped it would get finished. Cooper's done. Connor, I was going to be happy if I got it stitched by the end of the year, but I put a press on and sent it off to Vonna, and she was kind enough to turn that thing around, and a beautiful job, and yep, really proud of both of them. Worked out really well. So.
They're really beautiful, and you know, they're beautifully stitched, and you can really see where. I must have done some cross stitch when I was a small child. And one of the things that I never knew was this is going to seem kind of dumb now, right? it really is. Because when I would take two strands of thread out of DMC floss, I would just take two strands out and they would be twisted together, and that's how they were. And then I think you had said you just take one strand and pull and it just magically comes out.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did that. And that was one of those like mind blown moments, because I would sit there and pull two strands and have to untwist the entire thing.
Oh my.
So, right. So A, that, right. So, and B, when you take out the two strands and then put them back together again, they lie flat and they come out much nicer. Right. And it's such a difference, because I can even see in my own work, when I pay attention, actually try to make them lie flat, there is a difference. It does look different than if you, you know, just kind of let them twist whenever they want to, you know. I don't think I cared before, and I'm starting to care, because now I'm looking at the things that you do and that other people do, and I see the difference between adequate cross stitch and beautiful cross stitch, and now I think, all right, maybe it is worth putting that extra work in. So, yeah. And yours was definitely beautiful. It really is stunning.
Well, thanks for that. Yeah, I'm picky, but
yeah, but it's worth it. I can see where it's worth it to be so.
Yeah, no, it does. It makes you don't think about it going along, but it makes that a cumulative subtle difference all the way, and
it does.
By the time you're done, you really, particularly with any thread, but even particularly with silks, if you're careful with the way you put them in, you get that extra sheen that silk provides, and it really, it's very nice. Yeah.
So actually, I'm going to interrupt for one moment, because I read something interesting the other day, and I don't remember where. I thought I remembered where. It was a book. I was reading a book on needle painting. And mm-hmm. I will get back to you on what book it was, because it's something new that I got, because, you know, I'm a collector of books. And the gist of what I read was, there's a lot of hints and tips and tricks on needle painting. And one of the ones that I learned from Celeste Chalasani was, if you're needle painting, so if you can imagine, so you're going from an area of light to dark, top to bottom. So the top is light and the bottom is dark. If you stitch the top part light, when you're stitching the medium part in the middle, you come up through the area in the light part and then go down, as opposed to going the other way. Because when you come up, you sort of feather the threads that are already there, and it helps to hide the holes. As opposed to if you come up in the area, like you come up in a clean area and go down in a dirty area, which is what you would normally do, it creates a hole, like a space. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't look as nice. So you have to kind of do the opposite of what you would normally do. So that was something that was mentioned. Then, and that's a really good trick. And I had stitched one petal in my stumpwork piece, which was actually a surface petal, which is fortunately covered by lots of other things, before I learned that trick. And then I learned that trick, and the difference is very noticeable now to me. So that was one good thing. But then I was reading this other book, and what they said was that threads have a nap to them, and fabrics have a nap, like velvet, right? Everybody knows what velvet is. If you smooth it one way, it's, you know, it's shiny, and if you smooth it the other way, the fibers stand up and it looks darker, right? So what this person was saying was that silks particularly, but other threads, have a nap as well. So when you're threading your needle, you should always pull the threads out in one way and thread them in the same direction and stitch them in the same direction. And I had never heard that, so I wanted to see what your opinion of that was.
Well, I've studied that a little bit, and I will say that I try to do that. I'm not 100% consistent, but I do try to do that. And what I've learned is that there is a school of thought that believes that, but then there's also a school of thought that says it doesn't matter. And I think that's one of those, what little I know about it, I think that's one of those arguments that goes on and on and on, and reaches no conclusion, because it gets into the twist of the thread, how it's twisted.
Yes.
And it does
make sense, right? So from an analytical engineering point of view, because that's what I do, when you twist a thread, it's going to have a direction of twist, right? It's either left or right-handed. And if you stitch it one way, and all the twists are going in the same direction, that would make sense. And if you flip the thread, then some of the twists are going to be sort of clockwise twists, right-hand twists, and the other ones are going to be left-hand twists, and you could see where you would have a difference in sheen. Now, I think where the fine point comes in is the difference enough to make a difference in the appearance of the final product?
Yeah, I think that's the very crux of it. Yeah, really significant? And does it matter? And
right.
I don't know. I mean, that's one of those areas I'd really like to explore with an expert, someone who truly knows,
yes,
whether that matters or not. And mm-hmm. I mean, I have read about it, and it gets kind of technical, but the same, you know, like I said, I keep running into some people believe this and some people believe it has no impact whatsoever over the long haul. You know, it doesn't really matter.
I think it probably matters in the application. If you're doing large areas of a single color in a single direction, you might get some areas where, you know, the color is going to look a little different because it's going to reflect light slightly differently.
Yeah.
I also can imagine in things like crewel with wool, it would matter because there the fibers are large enough and the twist is large enough that it would be visible to your eye, where if you looked at it, you would be able to see. Now that said, it would be visible to you and I because we would be looking. To every other human being on the planet, they would not be looking for that.
Yeah.
So, I guess it you have to weigh how much that really matters. But it may be something that's worth, I have a couple of thoughts about this. One, I think this should be posed to the larger, I'd like this to be a dialogue. So I think this is something we should kind of post on Facebook and see kind of how people feel, both, experts and non-experts. But I'd also like to try it, because I wonder if there isn't, if this isn't one of those things where it's an easy habit to build, right?
Right, right.
Because you can easily see what the handedness of the spin of the thread is, and so the way that the way the book had described it was always pull the thread one way, and whichever end you pull out, that's the one you put through the needle, and you always stitch in that direction, right? But to me, I'm thinking in terms of science, and the way we talk about things is in terms of handedness. So I'm going to describe it to you. If you look at your hand, if you look at your right hand and you put your thumb out, right, you can see how your fingers spin around in a counterclockwise way, right? So that would be a right-handed spin.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at a thread from the end, if you're looking at the left-hand end of the thread, that would be a clockwise spin. So I would call that a right-handed thread. So if you got into the habit of always putting the right-hand spin into your needle so that the left hand would be the knot end or the, you know, the buried end, I wonder if that would make a difference. That if that habit would be worth trying to build. I don't know. I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't know either. I mean, I will say I do that in that I will pull from the same end and put that end in the needle. I do that. Am I consistent? So like, the next length of thread I cut off of the skein, am I consistent in that I do the same thing? I can't say that I am. I do, like if it's DMC, I know that I am consistent within those six strands of doing that. But a piece of silk, if it's 12, I'm always consistent. But beyond that, I can't say because I just don't pay attention.
No, and you don't always have a skein to use as a reference, right? Which is why I'm actually making the point of looking at the handedness of the thread. Because if you're working from a kit, which actually I am right now, you're working with threads that have been provided to you that aren't skeined. So you do have to look at the thread to figure out the handedness and which direction the spin is going in if you were to try to do that.
Yes.
So we may be getting into something that's way more technical than matters. And I think my gut says that this would matter in things that have a sheen or things that are laying out in a large area where if you worked in one direction and then you flipped to another direction and then you worked in another direction, you would see it. Or in threads where the twist is large enough for it to be seen by your eye easily.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, it probably wouldn't matter.
Well, see, this, that is one of the items I would put on a list for a class I would kill to take. And that class is, I would title it The Little Things. I mean,
yes.
I would love to have, I would sit for a day with an expert who could explain those kinds of things. Because, see, the other things I have that I struggle with constantly, and I don't know if others do, or maybe I'm just not as talented, I don't know. But, one of the tricks is to hold up, particularly with needlepoint, hold up your finished piece to the light and see if you can see daylight through each hole, meaning you don't have threads crossing over the holes, and so that you have clear stitch separation. And, I really strive to do that, to keep it as clean as possible. But then I wonder, like doing cross stitch, sometimes I'll go to great lengths to not have a thread cross a hole so and it's hard to describe without showing, but
yeah, I'm having a hard time understanding.
Yeah, it's, can you hold your piece up and everywhere that a thread went down or a thread came up there, you can see some daylight. There's a little bit of daylight. There's separation. There's not a thread crossing that hole.
Okay.
And as you go to the next, to the next stitch. And so that's one that I struggle with. And I will sit there at times and plot out how I'm going to stitch a section so that I keep that separation. And I'm not sure, I don't know if it's worth it or not. It's just one of those things I strive for. And I look for ways to make sure that I keep it as clean as I can and keep the stitches consistent. And it's that. And then I would like to talk to someone about thread length and thread wear And because, you know, you use a needle that will open the hole so your thread isn't dragging against the canvas or the linen or whatever it is. And, you know, that's a given that you do that. But then, you know, I often wonder, I mean, I can tell sometimes that my thread is losing its sheen at the end and I need to end it. Other times I can't. And is there some rule of thumb for that? Is there some, and then how does it change for each thread? And there's just all kinds of little things that I think of, and like finishing ending threads. Now, right now I'm working on that Anasazi song piece.
Yeah.
And big frustration with that is I did a good chunk of border on the reproduction sampler, which is all X's. Okay, all right, I'm going to start Anasazi's song because I'm going to do some needlepoint. Well, all I've done, the first step is to make these two stars using cross stitches with Krynek braid.
So you're doing more.
So I'm doing is cross, yeah, and this time it's with Krynek braid, so you got to watch so it doesn't twist and knot and all kinds of things. And I'm getting there, you know, I'm just plugging away at it. But, you know, it's how to do that. And then all I have on the canvas is Krynek braid cross stitches, just lines of it. There's not rows of it. It's single lines because you're outlining stars. Okay, so I've got to end that thread underneath a single row of Krynek braid cross stitches. Well, getting the needle you're stitching with to go under that thread is just darn near impossible. So what I've had to do to end is I've had to go down two full needle sizes, switch needles to end a thread, and then I could get that under three or four Krynek threads and end it off. Okay, so then every time I have to do that, is there another way to end this so that I don't have to do that? Should I be using away knot? Should I end with an away knot?
Yeah.
Or something else, and then stitch over it later. But I'm hesitant to do that because there's a lot of this to be done, and I don't want the threads getting loose. You know, I don't want the tension to fall off at the ends of rows, you know, because then you can see that. But it's just those little things that I would like to have a real expert sit down and say, you know, I can just ask those questions. And there's all kinds of those things that pop up that I think would make a great class.
You know what I think we need to do? It strikes me. This is the perfect thing. This is the perfect seminar hosted, right? So this is I'm just blue sky dreaming here. So this is what the Fiber Talk can offer seminar. We're going to come up with all of these crazy questions of how do you do this, or and it's not just, you know, how to questions, but what's your opinion on, because these are the things that are debatable. All right, how do you end that? Does thread have a nap? It doesn't matter. And I'm sure there's a dozen other ones that we could come up with. And then we get a panel of people that have slightly different expertise. You know, we get somebody from Europe, somebody from here, different people with slightly different backgrounds, and we ask the question and get different people's opinions, because I think in some cases there will be consensus and it will be, well, I've done it this way all the time, it works out really well, and everyone else will say, yep, 30 years done it that way, that's the way to do it. And then in other cases people will say thread has a nap, you absolutely should be doing it this way, your work will definitely benefit from it. And someone else will say, hogwash, that's complete garbage, it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
And I think that would be so interesting to see how that played out. And to actually, because I think sort of roundtable things like that and debates force us, you know, the listeners, to think about what we're doing. But it also forces everyone else to reconsider what they're doing and why. Because in order to convince someone else, you have to come up with a rationale. So it would be beneficial to everyone to do that.
Well, yeah, I agree. I would love to sit in a room and hear that kind of discussion. And then the other question that pops into my head is, does the general stitching populace, how many people really give a rip? Does it really matter? You know what I mean?
Well, but I think the people that go to seminar do.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's a small portion. People,
right. Right. But okay. But the general populace is not going to be looking, right? So, but we're talking about a different group of people. So there's the people at seminar that are paying money to sit in classes, to learn how to do things that they've done before, but they want to learn how to do them better. So are they going to care about thread nap and directions and how to do the best kind of away knot and how to end stitches properly? Absolutely. They're going to care. Are the general populace? No. And okay, how do I know this? Two examples. One example is you and I used to do reef aquariums, and we would look at our fish tanks, and we would have other experts look at our fish tanks, and we would look at them, and we would see one tiny thing, and we would say, ugh, tank's a disaster, right? And it would be because there would be one kind of anemone that wasn't supposed to be there, and we would see that as an utter failure. And anyone else would walk in and say, what is that beautiful flower over there? That looks lovely. And so it didn't matter to them, right?
Right, right.
So it doesn't matter, but it matters to the practitioner because we want to do it the right way. And we have an elevated expectation of ourselves in what we're doing. The second example I would use is in color. So working in color cosmetics, I have been trained by someone who has an excellent eye for color. And what you do is when you do color cosmetics, when you make eyeshadow and blush and things like that, you make it once in the laboratory. And then when things go to production, you have to match the color and you have to match it exactly. And there is no room for error. So when you buy eyeshadow the first time or the 19th time, it is exactly the same shade. So what you become trained to do is to see absolutely incredibly subtle differences in shade. And it's not even differences in shade, it's differences in reflectivity and we're talking about exactly the kind of thing of like, is the thread nap going to change how it reflects in light? So, I'll talk to, the person who trained me, one of the things she would say is, I have a really hard time buying furniture now. Because I'll walk into a furniture store and I'll look at a couch and say, well, they didn't use the same dye lot of fabric on that couch. I can't buy it, because she can see. She can see the difference in the fabric, and it'll be the tiniest little difference, but to her eye, it's glaring. And right. Now I've been trained that way, so I had to paint my dining room 3 times because I painted it once. And then noticed that the second can of paint that the paint store had given me, the sheen was slightly different. So it was the same paint. It was the same eggshell paint, but the sheen was slightly different. So when I walked through that room, I could see subtle differences. Mm-hmm. And because I didn't do the thing they always tell you to do, which is to mix all the paint cans together, every time I walked through the room, it drove me crazy. So I ended up having to paint it again. So we create these levels of expectation for ourselves that are so much greater than everyone else. So no one else that walked through my dining room could ever see the difference.
Right.
But we do.
Right.
So I absolutely think it would be worth learning that, because no one goes to seminar to learn how to be an adequate stitcher.
Well, right? I think not. I've not been to one, but I think not. Right. I think it's there. Well, yeah, you want to advance the cause. Yes.
Yeah, you want. I mean, you go for lots of reasons. You go for social reasons. You go to learn a new type of thing. But you also learn because you go because you know that there are people that are going to be able to elevate your craft, that are going to be able to teach you how to do things not just adequately, but spectacularly. So that you can. Do things like where you can hold your stitchery up to the light and be able to see through every hole. I mean, I think you and I still have to have a debate about whether or not that's valuable, but still, if that's something that is worthwhile, that's a question to be asked. We had a question about, one person was talking about making sure that the backs of your work are pristine. And then Debbie Rowley came on and I had asked that question and she said, who cares about the back? So
right.
Those are the kind of questions I think are really interesting to ask.
Yeah. Who cares about the back? As long as it doesn't affect the front. She always throws that in. Yeah.
Nobody's ever going to look at the back except for you and your crazy Stitcher friends. And so, you know, put acid-free paper on the back and then nobody's ever going to see it at the end. You know, I like the idea of this, you know, sort of getting different opinions.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And it, as I think I've mentioned before, you have to be careful because you create a monster that ruins the hobby for you. If you're not, you know, if you get into this too far, you can really just bog yourself down. But I have to say that that's the part that really intrigues me, is these little things. That's like why I've enjoyed the series of articles that it's Connie Lynn Borserine in Needlepoint Now has been writing about, you know, little things that make a difference. And I've really enjoyed it and just absorbed those, because that's the kind of stuff that I do believe makes a difference to a trained eye. To, you know, to the average Joe off the street, no, not going to make a lick of difference. But that isn't who I'm trying, you know, that's not my goal. My goal is number one, my top goal is to, for me to know what gives the best possible result. And then whether others notice or not, doesn't matter. I know that this one area I did not do as well as I should have, and I should have torn it out. But the rest of it, I nailed down pretty good. So,
So two things actually that occurred to me as you're speaking. So one thing is that the little things that matter, I think are going to, some of them are going to vary depending on person. So some things are going to matter very much to you and are not going to matter to me. And then other things are going to matter to me and not much, so much to you, because we have different aesthetic and we care about different things, right? So I think that to some degree that it's going to vary from person to person. So that's also an interesting thing.
Oh, very. Interrupt you here, but that's exactly it. And that's the whole thing is you – it does matter at different levels to different people, and that's where you start to have trouble with the stitching police. You know, where there's this hard and fast, you did it wrong because you didn't do it the way me and my friends have determined it's to be done. And that's that's that gray area that you have to be careful in.
And to be clear, we're not talking about juried work or anything like that, because that's, you know, meeting a certain standard, and that's a whole different ballgame. We're just talking about stitching for pleasure and having something be nice. But the other thing that we're forgetting is we're stitching for two reasons. Well, there are many reasons, but two main reasons. One, because it pleases us to do so. So we should stitch as much as it pleases us to do so, and then stop worrying about these little things when it takes the joy away, if we can, right? For you, those little things bring the joy, right?
That's so true. Yeah, it does. Yes.
Because reaching, you know, that level of perfection for you is very satisfying. For someone else to struggle to do that is not satisfying at all. So everyone else is going to have, you know, everyone's going to have a different goal in mind as far as the level of perfection that's important. But the other thing to think about is the other reason that we stitch is for an audience to a degree. Right? Because everything that you stitch is going to be seen by someone else, except for people like Arlene and Mary, who stitch and then stick things in drawers, which we've talked about. Most things that you stitch will be seen by other people, and other non-stitchers mostly are not going to be looking at it the way you and I do. So we look at it, we see the first thing we see is the piece. So what's the subject of the piece? Oh, okay, it's a flower, or it's figures, or it's a geometric. And then we start looking at the stitching. Oh, it's beautiful. Oh, the materials are this. Oh, you stitched it on this fabric. And then we start going deeper and deeper and deeper. Most people that walk into your house and see a piece hanging on the wall, or a pillow, or a stocking, look at it and say, oh, that's a stocking, and it has a Santa on it, and it's beautiful, and it's got Cooper's name on it. The end. That's the level of analysis that it gets. They're simply looking at the subject and what that subject means to them and means to the family, or how it fits into the decor, or how it makes them feel. they're not looking at the craft or the thread or all of these little analytical things that we're doing. So none of it matters.
Right.
All that matters is did you make something that made somebody feel something?
Yeah. No, that's very true. That's very true. And I think I mentioned before, I direct the handbell choir at church. And you practice a lot. I mean, playing handbells is challenging because you have to work as a massive team. And yes. you practice a lot so that it sounds like music and not banging bells. And, you work, as a lot of rehearsal time goes in. And then so you play that song you played 100 times in rehearsal, one time in a service. And people will come up afterwards and say, oh, that was so beautiful. And you have to train yourself to say, thank you, glad you enjoyed it.
Yes.
But there were these, and not say, oh, thanks. But there were these two measures that they just got all bollocksed up, and you have to.
Right.
You have to put that out of your head and for those people like you described that just come up and say, yeah, I just really enjoyed that. Oh, I'm glad we could provide some joy for you and move on. And then go get in your car on the way home, grit your teeth because you messed up a measure. So
yeah, because nobody's looking at that. They're looking at, what does that look like to me and how does it make me feel? It's like a play. A play is much like that too. Somebody may have screwed up a line or a door didn't slam when it was supposed to. And none of that is relevant. It's relevant to the players because they didn't do it the way they wanted it to. But really, everyone in the audience is walking away thinking about the subject matter and how it makes them feel.
Right. The product as a whole. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yes, there's benefit to all of those things. But we have to also keep in mind that we're the only ones that are going crazy over, whether or not you can see through the holes in the canvas.
Right. Well, it was interesting in this Anasazi song, the instructions. The first thing is to make these two concentric stars with crinic braid. And the instructions themselves say, right in needlepoint now, if you don't do the X's so that the top stitch is the same way on every X, don't worry about it, because if anyone notices, they're way too close to the piece.
Exactly.
And I read that twice. I thought, my, what an instruction to give. But then as I stitched the crinic braid, you a lot of times simply can't tell because of the way it reflects light. And so if you messed it up, really someone would have to be in there with a magnifier to see that you did an X the wrong way. And I thought, well, yeah, all right, that's basically stitch these stars and relax about it and enjoy it. And of course I didn't do that. And I got them going the wrong way one time, ripped it all out. But it was just interesting. And it has stuck with me as I've stitched these stars. I'm trying to get it just right and so on and so forth. And then the instructions were just make the stars, and don't worry about it. Sometimes that's what you do,
Sometimes it does matter, but sometimes it doesn't. And it's nice to know that.
Yeah. 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 The freedom to know. Yeah. You just stitch it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Right. And it's not that and to be clear, it's not that it doesn't matter because, you can stitch it and it'll look kind of, wonky, but who cares if it looks wonky? There's some times where you can stitch it inconsistently and no one will be able to tell, and that's okay. Right.
Yep.
So this is one of the things, this is where you and I differ, where I will say, okay, I can stitch it. Anyway, I would not have ripped that out at all, because if no one can tell and it doesn't affect the aesthetic of the piece, I'm running with it, right?
Yeah.
You cannot do that.
No. And I couldn't tell. Right? I stitched many of them before I realized, wait a minute, I got twisted around here, because I was twisting the canvas to do it.
Right.
I got turned around. And so then I literally had to, under the magnifier, work my way back to find where I went wrong and then tear it out to there and start over again. And yeah, I can't.
But you realize, with all due respect, that if you had to take a magnifier.
Right. I know.
And trace back how crazy that is.
Yes. And I did it.
Okay. All right. As long as you realize that.
I pulled them all out. Yep. I know.
And I respect your right to do so.
Thank you for that.
I also respect your need to do so, because everybody's got that one thing. You know, somebody was joking with me today about my books on my shelf, and they were teasing me. They said they were going to come in one day and reorganize them and just put them on in different order. Uh-oh. And literally my stomach turned over, because I said, oh no, you absolutely can't do that, because they're in order. They're where they need to be. And if you do that, that just can't be, I can't allow it. So I understand, you know, what that is, what that need to be is that way.
Yes.
So it's okay. It's okay to be that. But someday, person who eats the same thing for lunch every day, I would like to see you break out of that.
Yeah, well.
I don't know that I ever will, because I've known you a very long time.
pack two lunches and a dinner, because you're going to need them. Yep. So it's just, yeah, it's an interesting discussion. And maybe some of the experts will chime in if they hear this and offer some thoughts, because I'd like to hear them. I really would.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's an interesting discussion. I like sort of the philosophy of this.
Yes. All right. I have to get back to the twisted one.
Yes.
Because we mentioned, that's quite all right. We mentioned last week about Mary Corbett's December activities. Has a couple giveaways going, and she's been posting more and so on and so forth. Well, one of the things Vanna does is post something every day through December. Sometimes they're just thoughts. Sometimes there's little things about her family, and other times they're about stitching. And she posted a thing the other day about showing, because she was talking about how she shows everything that she does, videos and instructions for how to do everything. And she showed how to make a simple magnifier cover. So if your big lighted magnifier, you got to put something over it, because she told that she actually burnt her couch one time because she didn't put something over it. And more than one story of people burning a hole right through their needlework with that. And so I make it a point, even if I'm walking away for 5 minutes, to put something over that magnifier. And so she shows how to make a cover that will slip right over the magnifier, just using felt sheets that you get at Joann's or whatever, and some basic cloth, and how to sew it. And it's just, I always enjoy, she just shows these simple things that make a difference, and just a quick little project. That was one of the things. And then the other thing she's doing this month, she asked what people were interested in, and the number one thing was, what are the tools and supplies you use for finishing? So she's taking some time every now and then during the month to show her favorite tools or what it is she uses. And spoke at length the other day about it was perfect. You pour hours and hours into your stitching, and then you do a quick and dirty job on your finishing. Why would you do that? You know, get good materials, get acid-free materials, take your time, do them right, and get the best finish that you can on something that you poured heart and soul into stitch. And you know, she's dead right. And then launched into the things that she uses for finishing. And so I'm anxious to see now, as the month goes on here, just what else she offers in terms of finishing tools and techniques. So she's amazing. She is amazing.
Yeah.
How is your stump work coming?
How is my stump work coming? My stump work is almost done.
Oh, great.
Yes. So where are we with the piece? I really am actually almost finished. And then I took a tiny break because I think I have fear of finishing. Do you do that where you get to like 98% through a piece and then you put it down and then you don't finish it? I think I do that.
I think a lot of people do that. There's a mental thing that goes on there. I think a lot of people do that. Yeah,
I don't know why. So I really am almost all the way through. So I've gotten through stitching all of the wired slips. They're cut out. Most of them are stitched on, and so I'm going through the process of stitching them onto the fabric. And one of the things I ran into is that the wired slips themselves are on paper covered wire, and this was actually mentioned in the class. Other people had the same problem. trying to get the wired slip with the paper fabric, with the paper covering through the fabric was very difficult. But if you just, you know, took the paper off, the wire itself was much thinner, so you could thread that through the fabric pretty easily. So most of that is stitched on. I think I have some bee wings to stitch on and trim the turkey work on the bee, and that's pretty much it. And then it's done.
Neat.
It really is done. So yeah, that was good. And I think so. What was interesting about it is a couple of things. The surface embroidery was fun. I haven't done that ever. The stump work, so the raised work, was also fun and sort of, you know, lifting things off the canvas and or off the fabric and seeing what that does. It was also really interesting, and you could see how that would contribute to a lot of different types of pieces, because there's a lot of pieces in stump work that do animals and things like that. So, doing padded work, felt padded work and things like that, I can see the application of that. And I'm excited to try more, and, I'm less intimidated with needle painting. This didn't have a lot in it, and the needle painting that was in it was very simple. So now I'm ready to try some more difficult work, and I'm ready for it to be terrible. And that's fine, because that's where it starts getting into the more art part of it, where you really have to look, again, not so much at, you can look at the way somebody stitched something. But for me, I think one of the tips that was given also was to look, if you're stitching a flower, look at the way, you know, the pattern flower was stitched, but also look at the original flower to see how the colors blend and things like that. So that, you know, when I get to the point where I can sketch out a flower and actually stitch it the way the colors are in nature, that's when I think I will feel like I've, you know, gotten some mastery of it. So I'm looking forward to practicing that. And really that's what it is. It's the practice of it. That's fun. I don't have the need to be perfect at it. I'm very content to practice at it for quite a while, and not generate perfect work, because I know that each piece will hopefully get better. Or I'll discover that I'm really not a good needle painter at all and I'll get good at something else. I don't know. But it's really fun. So that's good. So that is almost done.
Well, you've answered the question that I had for you as you got toward the end. And that was, as you work through this project, would you end up with stump work in your mind and just say, I can take it or leave it? Or would you look forward to trying more? And it sounds like you look forward to trying more, because now you're over that initial intimidation hump and you can see where you can go with it. So, because that's kind of the fork in the road. I did that once. I'm over that. Or wait, I got to.
Yeah.
There's another thing here. I got to do this. Yeah.
I think there's a couple of things with stump work and needle painting. I think that there's one, do you enjoy it? And two, there's an element of people look at it and say, I couldn't do that because it's too difficult, because it does look very difficult. I looked at it and thought, wow, that looks frightening, because it's not like counted work, where if you just follow the directions and you're fastidious about your technique, you'll get it. This requires a lot of judgment, and it requires a lot of, you do have to make choices a lot of times. And that was intimidating to me, because I don't consider myself an artist in any form. And so the idea of having to choose, okay, where, how much of the light color am I going to use? How much of the dark? Where am I going to make, you know, things sort of blend? I don't know if I can do that. So, okay, all right, well, let me try it. And all right, it wasn't terrible. So,
yep.
So the stump work itself is technique. The padded work and doing the slips, that's all technique. I don't think anyone can't do that. That's just a matter of practice, just like anything else. The needle painting, that I still feel like requires But there's definitely technique and there's definitely practice. But I feel like it's more of like learning how to play an instrument practice, where if you keep at it, you will learn how to do it better, and you will get better at it. And I feel like I can do that. And the practice of it was so fascinating to me that I really found it enjoyable, and I want to do a lot more of it. So for me, the needle painting aspect of it was the most fun and the thing that I want to do more of the most.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And so that's where the books have come in. So I've picked up, it was the Trish Burr book is actually the one I was talking about before. I now remember. So Trish Burr has a couple of beautiful needle painting books. And that was one that it has just excellent, excellent instruction in it. So I would highly recommend looking up Trish Burr on Amazon and picking up a book if you're interested, because the way that her instruction is on how to needle paint, and it's not only just blending colors, but it's if you're stitching something that's curved, right? It's easy to imagine if you're stitching a house, right, where the roof starts out one color at the top and moves down, but it's square, so all your stitches are going in the same direction.
Yeah.
But a flower petal that is wide at the top and narrow at the bottom, not only are you changing color, you're fading from one color to another, but your stitches are also changing direction.
Right.
So you're doing two different things at the same time.
Yes.
So you have to learn how to do that. But and there's ways to do it, right? You just have to practice, really.
Right.
So am I intimidated by it still? Yep. do I want to do it some more? Yeah, I do. And there's so many different projects that you can pick up from books and things to practice.
Yes.
That I think it's definitely worth doing if you have any interest at all. And for me, I think the driving factor is that I find the finished work so beautiful that I want to learn how to do it because I want the finished product.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a huge driver for me. So if you look at stump work or you look at needle painted work and you say, that is absolutely beautiful, I wish I had that, try it. You have nothing to lose. You can practice with, you know, just plain, you know, very inexpensive fabrics from, you know, a regular fabric store and DMC threads. It doesn't take silk, doesn't take anything fancy. You know, regular, you know, small needles. It's really the supplies. The price of entry is very small. Just try it. You're sketching things out or tracing patterns on a piece of fabric, and then just going for it. So there's really very little to lose other than a little bit of your time.
Yep.
So I think you should try it.
Well, I will. Others should. And that Trish Burr, you know, if Trish would practice a little, she could get really good.
Her work is just, oh, I mean, it's inspired.
It's mind-blowing. Really, and those little birds she does, they look like feathers. God, it's mind-blowing what she does.
Yeah, yeah. And most, you know, the work that I did, everything is outlined. So everything has a really firm outline. And the birds, the feathers don't have an outline, right? They have that. Well, they look like feathers, right? You know what the edge of a feather. So now you've got a curved, so, you know, you're working on a curved surface, you're blending colors, and now you want to feather the edge. So you add that other little twist in there. It's exciting. I liked it a lot. So anyway, so I dropped all of that. So now I'm doing a counted cross stitch that's on gigantic fabric, just because I needed a break. And it's kind of a, after doing that, it's kind of a goofy piece for me because it feels like a very beginner-y piece.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what I kind of want right now. And it's just figures. It's a Shakespeare piece that has all different characters from different Shakespeare plays on it. And it's just a counted piece and follow the directions and it'll come out fine. And it's very relaxing and requires very little thought other than counting. So that's what I'm working now. And also Mary Corbett's trees.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Get the trees. Get the tree book. Yep. That's next for me. I got to do a tree. All right. We got to end this thing. Yes. Orna Willis, back with us this Sunday. Thanks for listening. We'll be back Sunday with Orna Willis. And yeah, that. Okay.
Take care.